The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, with you on this 14th day of February 2018. And this is going to be rather a unique broadcast. No, I will not be covering the other false flag event that just happened in Florida. These are weapons of mass distraction, folks. They've got us believing now, if you've noticed the narrative and where they've spun this one in Washington, D.C., about Donald Trump, the dossier, Hillary Clinton, she's fallen off a cliff, and her criminal operations through the Clinton Foundation. It's now come down to pretty much that the FBI might have had some people in there that had political leanings, and they tried to fix things. So let's throw a few FBI guys under the bus. Nothing to see here. Move on. Well, in today's program, you're going to learn a little bit differently how things are done and how they operate. And after I had my initial conversation with this gentleman, what set in was not what would be described as depression. You've heard me say before, folks, I don't know if you're ready to know the deep state secrets. You may not want to know it. You may not want to hear it. There's enough of funky stuff going on in good old town, any town USA in this country today. But my guest today, he was a 20-year independent contractor, specialized in sensitive covert assignments. And I will let him tell his story because it is what I have asked. And it's ironic because last week, what I have said is, you know, I don't trust whistleblowers. Strategic disinformation or displacement of fact. I've seen a lot of these guys come and I've seen a lot go. And really not quite fully trusting in what they had to say. Is this another operation? Who are these people? And what I've asked for is all the people that were involved. If you have a cacophony and many voices, they can't shut everything down. They can't shut everybody up. And this is what Mr. Cody Snodgrass is attempting to do, is just tell you the flat-out, unvarnished truth. He doesn't expect to live much longer because of who he is and what he's done and what he has witnessed. Cody Snodgrass, are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess we start with your bona fides. Let's run through that quickly. How you got into this, where you're recruited. Start from wherever you want to, Cody, and we'll just roll.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Like I say, hello to everyone listening, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. We always begin by stating the 1982 Intelligence Identities Protection Act, that's the IIPA, U.S. Code Title 50, Sections 421 and 426, and it states, disclosure of a U.S. government operative's identity is illegal only if it is done intentionally and with knowledge that the government is still actively maintaining a cover for such operatives. So the people we're going to talk about here, some of them are deceased. The active ones, I won't say any names about any of that. And there's a whole lot to cover here. And I'll just give a brief description of me. Back in 1974, I graduated from high school, and I scored in the top 1% of the SAT tests in physics going into college. In 1975, the CIA came to recruit me due to those high test scores, which I turned down. And I began training with several Vietnam veterans, two of which worked for the CIA over in Vietnam. And then later I graduated with a double bachelor of science degree in both mathematics and physics, and went on to graduate school to work on my master of science in physics. Got to fly the space shuttle simulator down at NASA at that one of those things we had down there. Then I worked for Chevron Geosciences and went up to Amoco Production Company as a petroleum geophysicist. Now, all of this time, I had been doing black ops. We were independents. And the early 1980s, 82, 83, 84, 85, while in Tulsa, my civilian cover, it's called a NOC, it's a non-official cover operative. We worked over in Arkansas in the multiply nested CIA operations over there with Bill and Hillary Clinton and the whole thing at the MENA airport. And the book that I have written about all this, it took 4 years to write. It's called Choosing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. And we'll tell you how to get to that later. It's a 700-page book. It details all this stuff. So I'm just going to cover a few basic points here. We worked in CIA Operation Centaur Rose. It was an arming operation for the Contras down in Nicaragua. Back in 84, Congress had passed what they call the Boland Amendment, which forbid us to have troops down there. And at the time, John, you know, they had the Sandinistas led by Daniel Ortega, the guy down there, and the Soviets were arming them, and Reagan didn't want, you know, the domino effect of them to keep taking over countries and move into Guatemala and so forth. So he secretly ordered CIA director to conduct these operations. There were three multiply nested ones, codenamed Jade Bridge, Screw Worm, and Centaur Rose. And Centaur Rose was the one I was in, and that was how we moved arms down there through the MENA airport down there. So all that story is detailed in the book. It's a lot to cover. And then after that, later on, I was hired to bodyguard Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler down in Guatemala. He was killed in September 8th of 1988. He was actually shot down there 2 weeks before I was redeployed to go down there. And that whole story's in the book. It's never been told before. For some of the younger listeners, John, you know, Sadler was 1965. He got hurt in play coup, stepped on a punji stick in the highlands of Vietnam, and went to the Subic Bay Hospital and wrote that Battle of the Green Beret, which was the number one hit single here in the United States back in 65. And that whole story's in the book. It's never been told before. And then later on, September 18th through the 22nd of 1991, I was involved in some other operations. Some people and agents lost their lives in those operations, and I was targeted for termination in Project Slammer. And that's a whole chapter in the book about Project Slammer and what it was, and we can talk about that more later. And I died there. I had to be shocked back twice in a civilian hospital here in the States. And then later on,
Cody, let me stop you right here, because something very important. Choosing the Light is the book that you specifically wrote, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. And I had asked you a question because I have stated on this program that I didn't have a whole lot of respect for mercenaries because they were just guns for hire. Yeah. And that anybody that do operations and killing people just for money, well, their allegiance is to nothing else but their paycheck. And you revealed to me that in your days, being a CI, that you were making up to $20,000 a month. And this is back in the 70s and 80s, and that was damn good money. And I had asked you the question flat out, and I didn't preface it by anything. I just asked you the question. I said, why would you ever do anything like this? And your answer was immediate. It was for the money. But something happened. Now, the incident you just brought us up to, you're in the hospital. They got to shock you twice just to bring you back. What happened at that point in your life?
Yeah, we had been in some ops, and one of my partners was the son of an active CIA agent over in Bangkok, Thailand, and he lost his life along with some other people. And they inadvertently blamed me for that and targeted me for termination. And that whole story is in the book. But when I did die after that, I had an epiphany and I changed. You know, after you go through something like that, it's a big life-shattering, life-changing ordeal. It's almost spiritual. And so that changed me around to trying to be of the light and to help people. We'd also done some bodyguard work. And, you know, the best assassins, John, are the best bodyguards.
Right.
And conversely, the best bodyguards are the best assassins. Mm-hmm. And I'd learned a lot with that hit that happened down there in Guatemala with Barry Sadler. And so, I had that change. And I decided to help people and do things, you know, to help people instead of hurt them. And there's a lot less money on that, on the light side and the truth side. But I had at that time become, I had PTSD real bad. My medical files now state that I'm 100% totally and permanently disabled with severe PTSD. And I've been drinking very heavily for all the stuff that we had done. And I was operationally ineffective at that point. And so when all that happened, it took me a couple of years to get back up. I was in a wheelchair for a while and everything. And so I decided that I was going to do something good with my life and try to bring the truth out, and try to expose the truth to help our country, because I saw what was going on from the black ops world and how our country was being fed on by all the looters and the politicians and the deep state. And I realized that if somebody doesn't do something and stand up, we will lose our country. We will lose our Constitution, and we will lose our freedoms.
Well, Cody, this is exactly what I've told the listeners of this broadcast for a number of years. I revealed to you that back in the 90s, there was me and another guy running around the country firing up militias. We had Bill Clinton, along with the the lesbian wife, in the White House. And what we were fearing was a gun grab. There was a cacophony of noise going out there, and we had seen what had happened with other countries, gun bans, and they got national health care, by the way, as well. It's kind of like a dual package. We have not quite yet done away with, it's kind of in limbo with the health care, national health care. But even after shootings such as Las Vegas, any other type of one of these operations that's designed to do one thing, and that's to tug at the emotional heartstrings of people to get them to react, to get their intended goal, and that would be the consideration for banning weapons maybe entirely. Now, at that point in time, the way we looked at it back in the 90s, if the guns go, there goes everything, because what are you going to do? Throw insults at them or paper them to death or bullhorn them outside of their offices? This is, as you stated, a war. And it is, so far, to most people's perception, a low-intensity information war. But that's not really what's happening, is it?
No, there's three basic levels. There's, there's a spiritual war. There's a mental war, which is, the information war and strategic deception and how to trick civilian populations into going along with, voluntarily giving up their freedom. And then there's the physical stuff, you know, the actual taking of the guns and all that other stuff.
Right.
And so that's what this whole book's about. It's 700 pages, and it details many false flag events leading up to the Murrah Building bombing, which I was offered $1 million to bomb that building.
Now, it's interesting that you wrote this book on Oklahoma City, because our paths, unbeknowing, I didn't know you, you didn't know me. We had a sit-rep the day of the bombing. Approximately 30 minutes after the bombing, we had a Patriot down there, gave us a sit-rep, faxed it over to the network. That was rewritten and sent to a U.S. congressman down here in Texas. Somebody picked it up, turned it over to the FBI, and the next thing I know, I've got the FBI and the ATF. And, of course, and you'll recognize the description of this type of fellow, the guy that looked like he was in a hurry, needed a suit, grabbed one off of a store rack someplace, and it happened to be two sizes too big for him. The guy that stood around with the ponytail with that deep stare. And the only thing that I knew how to do, and I kept all the suits. Everybody showed up in suits is not to alarm me, okay? County sheriff showed up in a suit. His deputy sheriff showed up in a suit. The FBI was there. I already busted their little observations going to my office, and I was going around to the duels that were posted throughout the area and asking them, you look a little lost, can I help you? And they weren't making the connection to who was asking the question. So after I'd made the rounds on all their little observation posts there, they finally figured out that, wait a minute, this might be the guy we're looking for. So I caught him on a side street two blocks from the office, again, rolled up in my truck, rolled the window down, and said to him, Cody, fellas, are you sure you don't need some help here? At that point in time, they realized what was going on, and I was tailed immediately. And then the story goes from there, but I left all these clowns standing in the driveway. And I asked, I said, who's the county sheriff? The guy raised his hand. I said, you I will talk to. Please go in the building. And that's when the FBI, well, we just have a few questions for you. I said, I'm sure you do. You're the field operatives. You've got time. Just hang on. And that's when the individual was standing there with a ponytail with a squint. And I just walked up to him, looked at him, turned my back on him. And I was so close to him, Cody, I could feel his breath on the back of my neck. And I figured that was the best way I could tell this person, you know what, F you. I'm not afraid of you.
This was in Oklahoma City?
No, this was in Battle Creek, right outside of Battle Creek, Michigan. The sit rep came a half hour after the bombing. It was retyped and sent over to a congressman's office here in Texas. And the next day, I was descended upon, and I don't know if you remember on CNN, the cryptic facts that came over that CNN ran with for 10 days. I'd actually called up CNN and explained to them that was a sit rep that came to us from Oklahoma, and that's what was forwarded over to the congressman's office. There's nothing covert about this. And then somebody looked at the time identifier on it, and it appeared that it came in an hour before the bombing actually took place, which was a little after 9 a.m. on April 19th, 1995. It showed that it came in an hour before. Well, this is before the faxes were self-correcting in their times, and I never bothered to change it after the seasonal time change. So they descended upon me, and the FBI was there for 2 days, and they sent in their best guys. And now I realize, after talking with you, what they were actually there for. They were there to find out what I knew. Not that I was a possible participant in that, because, well, obviously everybody knew that it was not Timothy McVeigh. Everybody within the agencies knew that was their patsy. And I had confidential informants with the FBI in Michigan that tried to plant me in a hotel meeting with Timothy McVeigh and Mr. Nichols. That's how far that they were willing to go to try to implicate the militia in Michigan, that somehow that this was some kind of conspiracy to bring down the government. Let's take the break here. I'm talking with a gentleman with, folks, more guts than a lot of you have out there, I'm sure, Cody Snodgrass.
We'll take the break. We'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We are back. One other thing I wanted to mention, Cody, I was actually sent a picture from around Oklahoma City that they had actually used as a site to cook up the, well, it's not, you lost him? Okay. Well, isn't that funny? You don't suppose that was an accident, do you? I've listened to some of his recordings he's done, and they do interfere with his calls. They put a lot of electronic noise in there. One with Jeff Rentz, it got to the point where you couldn't even hardly understand it. There he is right there. That's him right there. Okay, transfer him over. Did it transfer? I'm going to ask the listeners here, do not call the network, all right? Do not call the network. I am not going to be taking any calls here in these 2 hours, so don't even try, okay? Just a warning. You have him? Yeah, this is rather fascinating. The interview that almost was. Are you going direct on that one? All right. Sorry, folks. Just a technical difficulty here. And it's just coincidence, I'm sure. Dead air. He has a certain way that he rigs up his comms. Do me a favor, Mike. Call him on that line. Call him on that line. You know, I was never good at treading water in an instant like this. You know, what do you go to? Wow. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait for him to make contact. This is rather fascinating. Did he actually say that? He's got a SATCOM. I don't know if you can make the hookup with us on that one or not. All right. Well, okay. We can't get him back. We can't get him back. Hang that phone up. Just hang that up in case he tries to call you back on that line. Okay. Well, what I started to say before we got temporarily, hopefully temporarily interrupted here, is I was sent a couple of photographs from the Oklahoma City area where they had actually cooked up, per se, the bomb, the one that Timmy the McVeigh rolled up with in front of the Oklahoma City building. And replete with a yellow Ryder truck, the blue barrels, the fertilizer dryer. Okay, I got him back. Cody, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Before that rude interruption, I was just describing to the audience that I had received a set of photographs from the Oklahoma City area, and this is where they made up the ammonium nitrate and the fuel oil replete. It was a fenced-in area, chain-link fence, the blue tarping that they put up. They had the horizontal fertilizer dryer there. They had the Ryder truck. They had the blue barrels. They had everything on site, including the fuel oil. And one enterprising pilot flew over the area, realized what he was looking at, and took a few snapshots and sent it over to us. It's interesting that these many years later that our paths would kind of cross on this particular infamous day, let's say, in America on April 19, 1995. And you just kill it, they came to you. You were to be the original cutout or the original Timothy McVeigh.
Right.
And they had pretty much made up their mind in the year 1995. You were getting ready to retire. You were an asset. They viewed you more of a liability than an asset. So let's make the big payoff, one more job. Here's $500,000. You've got an operation to do. And when you asked the individual that you had met in the woods, you know, what's the target, they told you it was a federal building in Oklahoma. And at that point in time, what did you tell them?
Well, like I said, after Project Slammer, where I died, and it took me a couple of years to get back up again, I was operationally ineffective, basically. And I knew too much. I know a whole lot of things. The Oklahoma City bombing thing is just one little deal in a long string of things. But, you know, they offered me that job, and I knew that it was a patsy op. The amount of money for something like that was way too low. And but my main thing was not money at that point. It was our country. And I turned it down based on patriotic grounds. And Harold Leonard was the guy that offered me that job. He'd been a contractor and been in the military. And he's now deceased, so I can say his name without further, you know, problems. I just want to say one thing, you know, that's why we always quote that Intelligence Identities Protection Act, John, because that goes back to CIA case officer John Kiriakou, who got 30 months in federal prison for violating this act. He was talking about the CIA's RDI program, the Rendition Detention Interrogation Program at Gitmo, and he was sentenced in January 2013 for inadvertently letting out somebody's name. So I can say Harold's name. He's dead now. And when he offered me that job, you know, I just went off on him, and I said, you know, you guys have went too far this time, and these are our own people in our own country, and I'm not going to do it. And at that point, I turned from a CIA asset to a liability. The very next day, one of my handlers in the CIA, his name is Duke Flaglier. He's also deceased of Agent Orange, so I can use his name. He did two tours in Vietnam with Barry Sadler and all. They trained in the 20th Special Forces Group in 63. I think it was at Fort Bragg where they were. But when he got out from Vietnam, he became worked for the CIA, accepted civilian recruitment there. But he called me the very next day after I turned down that Murrah Building job. And he told me, he said, you need to leave the country. And I said, why? And he said, because you know too much. And now you've changed from an asset to a liability. And he offered me the keys. He had a house in Belize and offered me to go down there. And he said, we'll stage you. I'll meet you down there, and then we'll stage you somewhere else outside the country, and you need to get out of here. And I told him, no, I'm not going to say anything. Nothing's going to happen. I didn't know what all else was going on. But I did know that I turned that job down, so I did have guilty knowledge of a major op against our own American people, and that did make me definitely a liability.
Yeah, I could understand why. You know, most people today, they have absolutely no idea, and I've said to the listeners of this network that I'm not sure that you want to know. I don't know if you want to know how deep, how dark, and how dank this really is. In order, and I've said this repeatedly, in order to make the necessary repairs, you have to do the proper diagnosis. And unless that is done, and these deep state assets cut out of the issue here, we are not going to get anywhere. I mean, absolutely anywhere. The Oklahoma City deal, by the way, who ordered that one up? Pentagon?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, they use assets like me or military cutouts like McVeigh or whoever to be a patsy. They knew that was going to be a big op, and there'd be a lot of media coverage and so forth, and they had to have a cover. And the cover, of course, was a Ryder truck and all, and there's no way that could have done that damage there. But the real thing, John, is that the American people really don't know much about is why they ordered the bombing of that building.
Now,
before
you continue, and I want to talk a little bit about the officer that was the first one in that building, but this was a sacrifice operation, pretty much like let's put the babies up on the altar and just blow the snot out of them, turn them into human confetti. There was a bomb that was discovered by this police officer in the nursery of that federal building, and that was supposed to go off and kill all the children there, correct?
Yeah, that officer's name was Randy Yeakey. Terry Yeeke was his name. He was the first responder in there that actually found that bomb. There were three bombs that were planted. The Ryder truck was the cover. So that was a timing op where they probably had static surveillance up in the OG&E building, the Oklahoma Gas Electric, or one of the buildings. And when McVeigh, who was the patsy, he, of course, did not know that the other bombs had been planted there. And he was to pull up and set the timers and then leave. And then they were going to try to simultaneously detonate the three charges in the building and then use the Ryder truck as the cover for the pre-planted explosives in there.
Okay, so that couldn't have been remotely set off because obviously McVeigh was in and around that truck. You know, having prior military experience, they didn't want him to think for a moment. You know, you got to, instead of remotely detonate this thing, you got to set some timers on it. And that seems kind of dicey there to actually do the remote inside the building along with that truck.
No, well, here's the problem. Here's why two of those bombs didn't go off from an operational viewpoint. On another interview, I think it was overseas somewhere, they asked, well, how would you bomb that building? You know, and I'm an explosives expert. But the thing with that is you would have planted C4, which was has a high detonation rate. It detonates at approximately 26,000 feet per second. It has a real sharp cutting type of explosion. Ammonium nitrate is a big push. It has a spherical wave divergence that comes out from that explosion, and it spreads out, and it's just a big push. There's no way it could do that damage. So I would have used, if it was me, I would have used thermite and C4 on the structural beams. Now, here's the problem, John, with the timing of all that. When you use standard U.S. blasting caps, the DuPont blasting caps, or M7 caps, is the military designation, and then they detonate with about, has to have a minimum of 3.2 volts. And what you have to do is insert the caps in the explosives. You have to pre-plant them. And what they did was use guys that were dressed up as phone crews and workmen and plumbers and so forth. They have to plant the charges ahead of time, okay? Then you have to put the caps in the charges, okay, and leave them shunted. And a lot of civilians don't understand this. When you shun a cap, that means the two leads that go into it have to be connected together, because what happens, if you unshunt the caps and you're operating in a civilian circumstance, like a big city, like Oklahoma City, they have a lot of cell phone signals, microwave signals, TV, radio. These secondary RF waves, radio frequency waves, can go to the lead wires into the cap and cause, it sets up induced currents. And if there's enough of a strong enough signal, the induced currents can prematurely detonate the cap. And that's something that they couldn't allow. They had to have the caps all go off on three different sets of explosives at the same time that the Ryder truck pulled up there. So that was approximately 9:03 a.m. on April 19th of 95. But what you have to do is you have to set up the explosives, camouflage them so the civilians in the area cannot understand what's going on. Then you have to keep the cap shunted and then de-shun them and hook them up to a power supply very, just before you need to use them. If you leave them open or leave them hooked to a power supply, you risk secondary RF detonation. And anybody in ops teams or alert teams or the JSOC, Joint Special Operation Command teams, any of those guys know all this stuff. And so what happened, I suppose, was that they had the caps in there shunted. They de-shunted them, hooked them up to their power supply, and then there was some kind of a failure where two of the bombs didn't go off. And the one you alluded to was the one under the daycare center. The reason they planted it there was to increase maximum civilian casualties of children. This is a standard PSYOPs operation where you show multiple children. children being mangled and everything. Right. And if you recall, John, back at the time, Time magazine, they had that picture of the firefighter carrying out that mangled baby.
Yes.
And they blew that all over the civilian news to pull on the heartstrings of the American people.
And the reason, now, I want to get back to Terry here in a few minutes, but the reason why the Pentagon ordered this operation, what were they trying to do?
Okay, this is a very good question. You're going to have to bear with me for the listening audience has to know a little bit of history. There were two basic reasons. One of them was back in the 80s in the operation I was in Centaur Rose, 82, 83, 84, 85. Hillary and them had the Rose Law Firm going there. Bill Clinton was governor. He was running front for the CIA. They were running all these operations in and out of Arkansas, and these things are all detailed in the book with dates, times, names, all kinds of stuff, and it's too much to go into here. But the basic thing is that after a period of time, they were taking the arms down to the Contras, and they were bringing cocaine and drugs back up into the MENA airport, and then they were distributing those drugs. How all that was done and the ops that I did, and how we moved and hid all the explosives and all the arms, all that stuff's in the book. But to make a long story short, during that time, civilian law enforcement got involved. It was a sloppy operation at the MENA airport, running all these drugs and guns.
Oh, brother, was it ever.
Oh, it was real sloppy. And then they had to clean it up at the end and everything. But Bill Clinton was using his powers, governor, to cover everything up. The CIA.
Well, and let me stop you right here, because you know how Hollywood treats everything lightly, and they'll take a moment in history and then spin a script that has absolutely nothing to do with anything. But there was a movie that came out recently starring Tom Cruise that he played the role of Barry Seal. And for all indications that I've gotten, that was Barry Seal's role in MENA, Arkansas, with running the drugs, the guns, and all this other stuff. And, you know, you want to talk about sloppy operations to the point that CIA, and that's who Barry was working for at the time, that the CIA wanted to bring up the troops from down there in Central America to bring them in to MENA, Arkansas, to train them, to send them back. And then they had a little operational problem, because half the guys didn't even care about that. What they cared about is just having some money. And hell, half of them wanted to stay in the country. They said, well, why the hell should we go back and fight whatever when we're in a nice situation right here?
Well, there were three multiply nested ops at the same time. Centaur Rose was the one I was in with the drugs and the arms. The second one was Screwworm, which was centered out of Mexico City, which happened to they were manufacturing illegal automatic weapons and so forth. And Jade Bridge, and that Jade Bridge operation is what you're talking about. They brought Honduran pilots, Nicaraguan pilots, stuff up into around the Ochoa National Forest and in different areas in Arkansas, and they were training them in light aircraft, how to fly light aircraft. I was offered a job at that time. While you got to remember, I was a civilian geophysicist. We worked in exploration and research. I had 19 people under me at Amoco. I was in mid-level management, but that was my front. And then we were running Centaur Rose ops underneath that. Then I was also offered a job to teach hand-to-hand combat down to the Nicaraguans, the Contras.
Just a moment of clarification here, Cody, because we know that in order to provide cover for the various operatives, that you will go work for a newspaper or a magazine or an oil company in your case.
Yeah.
Well, how well were you able to sell the idea that you were an actual geophysicist and you're in there working a job for Exxon, but you were actually the CIA asset within that company?
Well, it was Amoco. That was an oil company. But I just did my job there, and then I would do ops underneath that at different times.
Okay.
You know, it was a great logistical battle, but I was making a whole lot of money on both ends, and so it was worth it. But Tulsa, Oklahoma is not very far across to the border of Arkansas there. So we made a lot of night trips, and we did a lot of stuff at night. And I wasn't getting much sleep at all. And after a while, it starts wearing on you.
I understand.
But anyway, the thing about the Murrah Building is during the time all that was going on, the ABI, which is the Arkansas Bureau of Investigation, the DEA, the IRS, various types of domestic law enforcement began poking around. And so they accumulated a great deal of records. And those records, investigating the Rose Law Firm and the Clintons and the bank in Little Rock with Jim and Susan McDougal, who the Clintons had become involved with in the Whitewater scandal. They were washing all that money. There's approximately $100 million a month, roughly, in cocaine. And they had to wash the money. They washed it through that the banks in Little Rock and back to the Worthington Bank in Atlanta, which went back out to the BCCI Bank. That's the Bank of Commerce and Credit International out in the Caymans. And so they had to wash the money. They had to move the drugs and the arms. And that was all part of the op. Now, when the op started getting sloppy and they got to the end of it, all those records were stored at the Little Rock FBI field office. And prior to the Murrah Building bombing on April 19th of 95, those records were moved to the Murrah Building. And so that's one of the reasons when the Murrah Building was blown up, all those records, it could have been used in the Whitewater investigation and the future impeachment stuff for Bill Clinton. All of those records were destroyed. You remember back in July 26th of 94, that's when the Whitewater investigation began.
Rose Law Firm and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and then Ken Starr was appointed the Whitewater prosecutor in August of 94. And then you fast forward to April of 95, just a few months later, the building goes up, right when all those records would have been necessary. But that's not the big reason. That's not the real reason, John. While, I mean, it certainly helped the Clintons avoid prosecution for all the things they were doing. But the second reason, this is the big one, and this is, I just have to go through some basic history here, if you'll allow me to, sir.
We got a break coming. We got a break coming. I already stole one break. We got a break coming up in approximately 2 minutes, so continue, and we'll do the break, come back, and you're going to be with us for the entire next hour as well. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, okay, so there's not enough time. This is a big thing that the American people excuse me, have to know about, and we'll talk about this, the big reason why the Murrah Building was really bombed. But in the meantime, I just wanted to say that when Centaur Rose, the operation there in Arkansas, was being cleaned up, the Clintons and the McDougals, they were running Whitewater scandals, washing money. There was all kinds of nefarious things going on. Bill Clinton's brother had been busted for cocaine, and then Clinton pardoned him. There was another CIA agent named Dan Latimer who was involved in all that.
Latimer or Lassiter?
I think it was Lassiter.
Okay, all
Latimer.
Right.
I don't remember the name.
Okay,
right,
go ahead.
Now.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, when they were shutting all that down, Barry Seal was the main pilot. He was running Rich Mountain Aviation, and he also trained back with the guys that I knew, Barry Sadler and Duke Flaglier. They were all in that 20th Special Forces Group in 1963 before they went to Vietnam. And then when Barry came back, he was a pilot, and he ran all those ops out of MENA. He flew a C-123C called the Fat Lady was the name, and a bunch of twin-engine Beechcrafts at Rich Mountain Aviation. But when they shut that op down, they had to kill off all the, you know, the lower personnel, which is what they usually do. When the case officers and agents, they pick up and move off to some other op. But that controls the blowback. And Barry Seal was shot on February 19th in 1986. He went to halfway house in Baton Rouge. He'd been set up by the DEA. And then he was hit by four Colombian hitmen that day. They just walked up with four 9mm MAC-10 machine guns and opened up on him. And during that same exact day, February 19th, there was 25 to 30 Colombian cartel hits done down in Colombia. One of them was Pablo Carrera, the number two Medellin cartel guy, and Jorge Ochoa, one of the Ochoa brothers. And so what the CIA was doing was, when they were shutting the op down, was killing off all the lower people, you know, to control the blowback.
Okay, hold on one second, Cody. Here comes the break. We'll take this one. We've got a short segment and the second hour, folks. And again, I'll ask you, please, no phone calls. We'll be back with Cody Snodgrass. The book, ladies and gentlemen, will tell you how you can read this for yourself, Losing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. We'll be back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe, you know, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, you know, I have to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Oh, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's been too dark to see. Felt like knocking on heaven's door.
All right, we are back. What an apropos song, huh, Cody?
Yeah.
All right, continue, sir.
Okay. All right, the second reason why they bombed the Murrah building, and this is the big one. So I have to go back and just a little bit of history here, so everyone can understand the context of why this operation was planned. Back in 1980s, Saddam Hussein had come into power in Iraq, the Ba'ath Party, and they had become embroiled in a war with Iran. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Iran had about a 10-to-1 infantry advantage over Iraq. And Saddam Hussein, a lot of people don't know, he was a CIA asset. He was a paid asset, just like Manuel Noriega was down in Panama. And we have some stuff in the book about Panama and the Ba'ath Party and all the stuff with Saddam. But at any rate, Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense at that time, and we were given satellite intel to our CIA asset, Saddam. And also, we were afraid that he would be overrun and it would destabilize, you know, the worldwide oil prices and so forth. And so we covertly armed him in the Reagan administration. Two ways we did that, two basic ways, was with the Hawkeye 123C cluster bombs. These were the most efficient ways to kill troops en masse from the air. And the CIA copied the microfilm stuff, all the blueprints. They set up a front company down in Argentina. All the names, dates, times, all this stuff's in the book. They got zirconium, which is a key ingredient of that cluster bomb. It's on the import-export ban list. They faked a bunch of stuff through the Agriculture Department, got that stuff down there. They had a guy build a bunch of them. They sent them through Africa over to Saddam to covertly arm him. And the second thing they did, John, was they gave Saddam Hussein the AIM strain of anthrax. Now, anthrax, this AIM strain was developed at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and it was a weaponized form of anthrax. It had a smaller spore size and an altered protein coat from normal naturally occurring anthrax. This was the weaponized version where it'd be easier to spray and easier to be absorbed in human tissue to cause more casualties. And so they covertly gave that to him. And then after the Iran-Iraq war ended, then Saddam, of course, invaded Kuwait. And when that happened, it scared the Saudis pretty bad, and they put pressure on our government to do something about it.
Okay, let me stop and digress here just for a second on the issue of Kuwait. Wasn't it CIA director at the time, George Bush Sr., that had thought he had engineered a deal over there? What they discovered was the oil fields where they were slant drilling in that country, slant drilling into his oil fields on the other side of the border. And the deal was struck that, okay, Saddam, if you go in there, you can only take half of Kuwait. Well, he took the whole damn thing. Validity to that story or no?
I don't know about that story. I did work at Amoco. We worked Saudi Arabia data and seismic data and stuff from all that. And I know they were doing omnidirectional drilling, you know, and doing stuff like that. But I don't have any operational knowledge of what you're talking about right
okay.
there.
Okay. All right. We've got to take the top of the hour break here. Cody Snodgrass, Dark Secrets of Oklahoma City Bombing. Stepping out of the dark, stepping into the light. I hope there are other assets out there that are willing to come forward because we need some help.
Out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.